This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it,
we're talking about it
on iRadio.
Ronan Riley, who is a 27-year-old from Mullingar, is joining me now to help us raise awareness on sexual violence and the lasting impact that it can have on victims. Blona, thanks so much for hopping on iRadio's group chat. For those who may not have heard your story before, can you share why you decided to write Aftermath and also your story in general?
Yeah, of course. So my story sort of started 6 years ago. I was 21 at the time, and I was in college down in Mary Eye in Limerick, and I was on my summer holidays the summer before I went into final year, and myself and my friend decided to go down to Galway for a night out, down to the Arts Festival was on, and we had friends who were living down there, so we went down for a night out. And we sort of had a really typical night out, very normal, kind of went from bar to bar. Galway was packed. It was a really sunny evening. And we just had a really normal night. We met a group in one of the pubs that some of them were from Mullingar. Kind of some of the guys I was with kind of knew them, and our groups kind of joined, and, you know, the very typical kind of goings on. And sort of, I got asked back to a house party at this house. They had an Airbnb for the night, and I got asked to go back to this house party, and sort of went back, you know, when you're not ready for your night to end. And I went back, and was all very normal up to a point. So I then sort of, people started filtering sort of up to bed and kind of going off different directions. And one of the guys that was there from Mullingar was named Johnny Moran, and he sort of was the one who had asked me back to the house party, and he had said, you know, you can stay with us, but it'll just be a couch, like the house is packed, so there'll just be a couch. And I was like, yeah, that's fine. So the house party ended, and he went to go upstairs, and he turned off the light in the kitchen, and with that he just completely changed and turned into this totally different person. He had gone from this very normal, chatty 21-year-old guy to this extremely hostile and intimidating person. And he started the assault in the house, and he sort of had tried to take my clothes off, and he had taken some of his clothes off and tried to, you know, do sort of stuff in the house. And I kind of got away from him and told him that that's not what I'd wanted, and he got quite angry. He sort of started cursing at me and stuff like that, and the situation just got very tense, and he ended up asking me to go outside for a cigarette, which I did. I kind of thought, okay, like, none of my friends were in this house at this stage, and it was about 5:30 in the morning, and I thought it might just calm things down. We went outside, and he sort of walked across the back garden, and I followed him across the garden, and we ended up in the shed. And the second we got into the shed, he closed the door, and it locked. The door locked. I went to open the door straight away, and it was locked. And I said, that door is locked. And he had stopped kind of speaking at this stage. And anyway, in the shed, he raped me and raped with an object also, and I ended up being freed from the shed by two guys who were at the party, who came downstairs for a cigarette, and I was able to knock on the door, and they came and let me out. But that is sort of the main sort of basis of how Aftermath came to play, because after that I ended up being brought to the Garda station by some strangers that I met on the street in Galway that night. And then it sort of started this 5-year journey to getting Johnny Moran to court and getting him convicted of rape and aggravated sexual assault. And he was sentenced last year to 9 years in prison. So that's sort of how Aftermath came to play. It's a memoir of that 5 years of getting kind of justice and the impact that rape had on my life as a, somebody in their early 20s.
I think, like, whenever I have heard bits about your story before, but it always just renders me completely speechless because it is such an awful, horrific, inhumane ordeal, to have gone through. And I'm so, like, I cannot express how sorry I am that this happened to you because nobody deserves what happened to them. And it's just an awful, awful situation. I'm sure there's people listening this evening absolutely appalled that that happened to you. And, after going through the justice system, though, for yourself, I imagine that that's incredibly difficult for a survivor to do as well. What do you want people to know about the reality of reporting things like this and going to court? Because I know it's something we talk about an awful lot, that these particular crimes can go underreported.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's less than 3% of these cases are reported, and then you're talking about, a lot less actually getting to conviction. So the amount of people who are convicted to, the ratio of convictions to assaults is, like, it's scary, really. But I suppose I had no experience ever with the guards, with the justice system, with the court systems. I didn't really know how any of it worked, to be honest. So I reported literally hours after my attack, and they got to the house very early that morning, and I was brought to SATU, which is the sexual assault treatment unit, and I had all the sort of medical examinations. I required medical treatment, all of this sort of stuff. So that was the very start of the process, and that happened extremely early after the attack. And I was very naive to sort of think that this would all be done kind of within a year. I made my statement to the guards, and I kind of thought, okay, like, a year's time, this will all be done. But I think, I'd love people to know that these cases take time. They still are taking years. There's massive delays with them. And it's a very sort of lonely road. A lot of it, you're just waiting. You're just waiting on stuff to come back. And a lot of the time, you're very in the dark about what's happening. Now, I have to say, I dealt with the guards, and I dealt with SATU, like I said. I dealt with the rape crisis centres, so I really had that kind of wraparound sort of support from everyone, and I found every one of those people, and the guards everywhere, so supportive of me, and they really wanted the same outcome for me. They all wanted to see this guy be convicted, or, I felt believed instantly. I think people can be apprehensive about reporting because they think nobody's going to believe me, or I was out that night and I had a few drinks, so I deserved this to happen to me, or, they're just sort of the attitudes that we have within ourselves. But I can really say that anybody I dealt with, I just felt believed straight away. And although it took a long time, I did feel like they were trying their best for me. Everybody was trying their best within the guards and the doctors and all of that sort of stuff. I did feel very looked after, which I think is really important for people who may be thinking about reporting.
I imagine it was like a process to getting to that, as in a process to feeling accepted and believed in what was happening. I imagine were at first, were you quite reluctant to kind of even speak about it? And, what helped you start speaking openly about what had happened with the guards, but in general as well? And what would you say as well? I'm sure there's somebody listening this evening who may have experienced something similar, who may be on the fence about talking about it for their own reasons. What kind of
Yeah.
gave you the courage to do it?
I think in some ways we're our worst enemies. We kind of like to preempt what people are going to think of us, and we put the worst situation, the worst scenario in our heads, and we automatically think, I'm not going to be believed. And the nature of sexual violence also leads to this, because It strips you of your power, your dignity, your self-worth, you know, your control over situations. It takes, that person takes all of that away from you and leaves you completely, you know, on the floor. So your headspace isn't, you know, not like naturally isn't where it would have been beforehand. So you're very doubtful, and you're it's very hard to trust people. But I think the care that I got from the guards that morning, and I suppose it is worth kind of noting that I couldn't say that he had raped me, to be honest, until after the conviction. Like, if I ever told anyone, I'd say there was an incident where I was assaulted. Like, I felt like rape was such a strong word, and I didn't have the right to say that that's what somebody had done to me, you know. So I totally can understand that feeling of not being able to talk about it. But I think, I suppose, with the guards and stuff, they just put me at ease. They just, you know, really helped me through talking about it, and kind of, for me, they just kind of said it as it was, you know. They kind of said the words, you know, they kind of were like, look, we're not going to judge you, we don't care about your night out, or, you know, we just need to know what happened factually. And I just felt there was no judgment from them, you know. They just wanted the best in the situation. But I do think we can be our own worst enemies. We think the worst, and the actual reality of going and talking about it with somebody and reporting it isn't as scary as we think it's going to be.
I think that they definitely showed you immense support in that moment, and it's so heartwarming to hear, you know, that they were so supportive, and that you did feel at ease kind of in all of that situation. In Aftermath, you do talk about how the effects of sexual violence don't actually end after the night itself. In terms of like long-term impact, how's it been like on your day-to-day life since the attack itself, since the conviction, now that we're some time on?
I mean, the impact is huge. You know, in like you were saying there, in really sort of big parts of your life, like I often say that like my whole personality was taken, you know, the things I used to love were taken from me, my worth and all of that sort of stuff was taken from me by this person, you know, and a choice that he made to hurt me. But like that really small, basic day-to-day things were some of the hardest things, you know, like I stopped getting my nails and hair done, which sounds really vain, but as somebody who loved to do those sorts of things, that was a huge loss. I stopped buying clothes for myself and kind of rewarding myself for anything. I felt like I had deserved all of this to happen and that it was my fault. You know, things like being able to go out for a run by myself or a walk by myself, I couldn't do because I was so afraid of seeing him or him finding me. You know, sleeping, having a shower, like I hated taking my clothes off to have a shower because I just felt so repulsed by myself, you know. And they're really small, basic things in your day. Even sometimes brushing my hair, like I would feel he was around me, you know, it had a massive impact on my day-to-day life. And so much of that now, sort of post-conviction, has gotten better. And I suppose I have so much more freedom now that I don't live in fear of seeing him and stuff like that now. But I think it's definitely still in my life. Like, some days I wake up and I just still feel sad that it happened, or I still can't understand why he picked me. Or, you know, sometimes I think, will this ever kind of leave me? Will I ever have a normal relationship, you know, where it won't affect my relationships? Or will I meet somebody? Or, you know, so I'm in a different stage of that journey now. You know, I have all those sort of day-to-day things back, but the sort of bigger effects are still there, I suppose.
I imagine that a case like this, you know, the healing involved is a journey. And there's probably, no rule book on how it's to be done. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that certain things have started to improve for you. And did you find in aftermath in your book, did you find that therapeutic at all? You know, was it cathartic and did it help with the healing?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I actually really enjoyed the process. And I think, you know, the attack is still so relevant in my life and it's still so consuming. Like I would think about it every day, but I don't often get to talk about it sort of anymore as time moves on. And I found working on aftermath was like a space where for a few hours a week I got to talk about it in a healthy way. And I suppose I got to say things that I'd never said out loud. I worked with another writer, Niall Kelly, and, you know, it was, I had done therapy and I had done counselling for years after it, but I always felt in those sort of situations that the person was trying to give me strategies or talk through my feelings and stuff like that. Whereas with the book, I could just say it and it was just somebody listening. You know, it wasn't, there wasn't a fix or there wasn't, you know, have you tried journaling or have you tried melatonin or have you tried, you know, a fix for it. It was just a space to talk about it, which I think was massively important to me. I needed that place where it was still relevant and I could still talk about what had happened.
Since sharing this story, has it helped you to know that your voice is making a difference with other people? Does that also feed into your day-to-day healing?
Yeah, I think I feel very lucky that I get the chance to voice, you know, what people like me are going through, you know, like what other victims and survivors who might never get the chance, who might never be in a position to share what has happened, you know, who might never be in a position to get their attacker convicted. I feel so lucky to be able to share their experiences. And I take that so seriously. And I always am trying my best to kind of speak for those people because I know there's so many who will never share. And I know that because I get so many messages from people who might text me and say like something similar happened to them and they've never shared it or they've never reported. And I think it, the how much it must take for them to sit down and send somebody like me that message, you know. And I've often got messages from people too who say, I'm so jealous of you, like you got your attacker convicted and stuff like that. And I can totally understand that. So I take it really, really seriously. And I think it's so important to get these experiences out there, because I think for people who have no experience of sexual violence, it's so important for them to try and have an understanding of what people are going through. And maybe people aren't aware of the sort of whole life destruction that sexual violence has on somebody's life, and maybe have that understanding and try and let them see why it's so important that we try and combat it and prevent it. And you know, why that's so important is because of the life-changing effects and the amount it's happening. Like, it is happening to so many people. Especially in under 35s in Ireland, we have a huge epidemic of sexual violence. And like we were saying at the start, so little, less than 3% is reported. You know, that's a massive, massive problem. So I think by being able to speak out, and I suppose I'm a little bit younger than most people who waive their anonymity, not very many sort of my age do. So I think that's an important, I feel that responsibility as well.
You're a teacher as well in your professional life. What changes do you think need to be made, maybe at a younger level in education, about all of this to perhaps help those numbers come down?
Yeah, I think I think just having that openness and conversation, and that doesn't mean that you need to talk to your really small children about sex. Like, come on, have a little bit of cop on and be reasonable about these things. But I think I think the problem is with teenagers and stuff like that. I think the porn that's been accessed is like the levels of porn that teenagers are watching is crazy. And what they're watching, it's extremely violent stuff, and a lot of the really young people who are presenting to SATU units are presenting with horrific injuries because what they're seeing all the time is quite violent. And I think there's a real reluctancy to have these conversations. People feel awkward about having these conversations with younger people. But I think it's so important. And I think it's really important to have them and to be open and be blunt about it, and not be naive to think that our teenagers are sexually active and stuff like that. Like, be realistic and have the conversations and keep it as an open conversation. But also, I don't think that the need for education on consent and stuff like that stops at school. I think in adulthood, when we go to college, when we go past second level, there's a huge, gap where we don't have education on consent. We have the SPHE curriculum in second level, and then we go to third level, or we go into the working environment or whatever, and we have nothing. And I think that's a huge problem, and I suppose that's something we probably need to try and address and bring it into sort of all aspects of lives, like our sporting organizations, our work environments, there, all opportunities where these conversations on consent can be had and education on consent can be had.
For sure. It doesn't stop when you leave school, and
Yeah.
It's so important that everybody has a really well-rounded understanding around consent, and also issues that occur with sexual violence and rape. Like, I think that people probably need to get a bit of an education on how to perhaps help and support loved ones that have gone through it as well, because you do often hear about relatives feeling, quite helpless when things like this happen. And support wise, how have you gotten on with your support network in your life? Have they brought you a lot of comfort?
Yeah, like, I am extremely lucky that I have a very close-knit family, and I say extremely lucky because I know there's people in the same situation that mightn't have that family support, or could be a member of their family that is their attacker and stuff like that. So I know I'm very lucky to have them, and my family, to be honest, are the reason why I'm so far on, because they picked me up so much. But my friends also, like, I have a great support network within my friends, and that's not to say that all my friends were extremely supportive. I lost friends along the way who mightn't necessarily have done or said anything really bad, but just mightn't have been the friend I needed, or weren't around, or couldn't support me, didn't know how, felt awkward about the situation. So just sort of drifted away. And I think, again, by people having an awareness of the effects of sexual violence, it helps them to support and to sort of support those people who are going through it. And maybe, somebody will share something with you that has happened to them, and knowing how to react and knowing what to say, and those things are massive. So I think by having that awareness of what somebody's going through, and building that sense of empathy and understanding, will help you be a really good support to somebody.
I think my final question for you, Blanet, has to be probably the biggest one that you get asked quite a lot. If people pick up your memoir and they read it, or even if they're listening this evening and they resonate and they have experienced something similar, what would you say to them from your own experience about getting support?
I suppose I would urge them to reach, if they haven't reached out for support yet, if they're carrying this on their own, I would urge them to share it with somebody. And that's not me saying everybody should report their assault, because I know that it's just, that's not everybody's interest, that's not everybody's motivation, that's, not for everybody. But try and engage in some sort of support. If that's contacting, your rape crisis centre, they have phone lines, text lines, they have counselling, in-person counselling, online counselling. If that is going to SATU to have your health checked, if it's, going to SATU and having DNA kept, maybe you don't want to report it right now, but you think maybe there might be a chance you would like to at some stage, SATU can keep your sort of medical findings and stuff like that for a few years for you. Or if reporting is something that you want to do, but you feel, oh, there is no way I could do it. I would love to, but I'm not strong enough. What I'd say is, what you're doing every day, the fight you're fighting every day, is no harder than going to court. It's really hard, and it's not a nice situation, but the life you're living now isn't nice either. So you will get through it. You'll find that strength. And that's not a conscious decision. You don't wake up and say, I'm finding the strength today and I'm going to do this. But you will get through it, because you're getting through it as it is. And if that is something that you think you want for yourself, stick with it. The wait is long and it's a hard process, but for me, it was definitely worth it, and I would have felt that I hadn't done myself justice if I hadn't stuck with it. But like I said, that's not for everybody, and reporting isn't everybody's priority. But I just think if it is something you think you might want for yourself, just try and stick with it. We are seeing longer sentences, we are seeing more convictions. These people are being held to account, they are being named. And you're really well looked after by the services there. They do try and look after you.
Well, Bláthnaid, I thank you for being such an advocate for all of this and using your voice for something so beneficial. And I really do hope that what you've shared this evening, resonates with somebody and gives them hope. And thank you for coming on iRadio's group chat. Where can people get your memoir if they're looking to get, I suppose, to read it now and get the full story?
They can get it in sort of most bookshops, Easons Dubray Book Station. I think it's on Amazon online. It's on all of their online outlets as well, and most sort of local bookshops also.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show this evening, Bláthnaid. I wish you health and happiness in the future and the very best of luck with the book as well.
Thanks so much.
This is iRadio's group chat. If you're talking about it.